This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Welcome to another episode of Speak Up Effective Communication, the show on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network focused on your communication and leadership skills. I'm your host, Craig O'Neill. And in our episode today, we are continuing along our top 10 tips for public speaking, which does not just mean an audience in a room. We're going to talk about audiences today, though. That is tip number 3 is know your audience. Now, you may recall, I thought about combining this episode with this and tip number 4, which is know the room. But then I started diving into this audience topic a lot deeper down many, many rabbit trails. And I'm going to share a couple of those trails with you today. But know your audience. Tip number 3 on this list. It seems obvious, but I want to slow down on that word very specifically. What picture does the word audience immediately put in your head? A crowd of seats, people in them, right? People watching a performance. If you're picturing that kind of audience, I want to challenge that. The real question, I believe, isn't who's watching me? It's who am I communicating with right now? And that shift from performing at people to connecting with them, it changes everything. Whether you're speaking to a room full of people, a client at your service counter, or a staff member of your team, I think it'll give you some pause here to think about it. Today's word of the day is interlocutor. We'll define that word for you after a word from our sponsors who make this show possible. Your partner in technology, Autoflow is able to enhance your client interactions before, during, and after the visit from a single thread. To see how Autoflow makes it simple, visit autoflow.com. Your trusted companion, ShopDog Marketing, is right by your side, attracting the best customers and building long-term growth. Call ShopDog Marketing today or visit shopdogmarketing.com. Supercharge your auto shop with Inbound, AI-powered communication analytics and phone service for your professional shops. Visit callinbound.com. Okay, we're back. And the word of the day is interlocutor. It's a tough one. I've been stumbling over it, even preparing for it. It's an older word, and we're going to have some fun with this one today because it's not a fun word of the day unless we stumble over it all week long as we try to use it in a sentence and sound smart. It is a noun. It's defined as a person who takes part in dialogue or conversation. Or another definition is one who participates in an exchange, not just observing it. Using in a sentence, that would be the moment you see your client as an interlocutor instead of an audience, you stop presenting and start connecting. And that's what we're unpacking today, because know your audience. It sounds very passive, like they're just sitting there waiting to receive your message. But real communication, it's a two-way street. The person in front of you isn't a spectator. They're a participant. They have to be. And so before we dig in, I want to give you a quick note. We're going to talk about patterns, ways people tend to show up. These are observations, not labels. It's going to be tempting. We're even going to try to apply something like, yeah, it's kind of a label. But the goal is not to put people in boxes. It is to become more aware of what's in front of you so you can adapt, read without judging, stay curious, but let evidence present itself and learn to adapt. Okay, part one here. What is an audience really? Unsurprisingly, there's academic research on this. There are communication theorists who have debated for decades whether audiences are passive or active. I feel like the debate's very much settled. We've all experienced time as an audience, and we understand we are actually participating. I don't think this is surprising, but I want to go into this a little bit because it's really fascinating how people have perceived this. So it's going to get a little historical here. Back in the 20s, 1920s, you have to specify that now. Harold Laswell described propaganda as a subtle poison injected into the veins of the public. And this became known as the hypodermic needle theory. Audiences are passive. You inject the message, they absorb it, And the famous example that I saw in an article on this was Orson Welles' 1938 War of the Worlds radio broadcast, alien invasion drama, supposedly caused mass panic, people running into the streets thinking Martians had landed, except researchers later found the hysteria was overblown. Newspapers sensationalized. I know, hard to believe newspapers sensationalizing something to sell more newspapers. That could never happen today in any of our formats. No. But hey, by 1940, a man named Paul Lazarsfield studied voters in the FDR-Wilkie election. This was for FDR's third term. And he published The People's Choice. His finding in this was that people weren't passive at all. They interpreted, they pushed back. Interpersonal connections actually mattered more than media messaging. And I think that's really cool. Interpersonal connections mattered more than media messaging. And by the 1970s, a British sociologist named Stuart Hall, he formalized this into what we now call active audience theory. And the short version is people don't just absorb messages. They filter them through their own experience, skepticism, and this is key, context, their own context. And that's what I have experienced myself in just about every setting I've been in, whether it's speaking in front of a room, speaking with staff members, speaking with clients, speaking with family. It doesn't matter whoever you're speaking to. As an audience member, I am not passive. And I want you to think a little bit about this too, what your role is like when you're at a training event or you're sitting in an actual like audience type format. You're not passive either. And I know this. When I'm in a room listening to a speaker, I'm giving energy back. I'm nodding. I'm making eye contact. I'm signaling I'm with you. I'm clapping. I'm laughing. That's participation. That's not a passive audience. That's an interlocutor, right? So the word audience, it isn't wrong. I just want you to have a different context of thinking about the word. A lot of times our impression of a word, especially in the English language, where our words don't always get the proper context right. On the surface, you could read it very wrong or hear a word wrong and you not get the full picture. The mental picture it triggers for most people is if you walk to the counter or into a meeting thinking about someone performing for an audience. If that's the case, you really already miss the person standing right in front of you. And this brings us into the real question of how do you read that person in front of you? And how does it change depending on the context, their context, the behaviors they're demonstrating, right? Today, we're looking at three audiences. We're going to talk about a room full of people. I like talking about the public speaking thing, even though I know that's not everybody's specific goal for our listeners. I know a lot of times we're applying things to our service experience or our interaction with clients or whoever we're speaking to. But I do think there's a lot to learn from an audience in a room. We're going to talk about that first, then clients at the counter, and then we're going to talk about team members as different audiences. So audience one, public speaking. And this one, I crack up with this. It's been so true. I mentioned him before on the show. We've had him as a guest. I've done a recent webinar with him, Dennis McCarron, one of dear mentors in my life. And I feel so fortunate to have been a student of his in some of his training as well. And he looks, and I learned this straight from him. There's three types of people at any training event, and you might identify yourself in this too. I've been multiple of these in my time. There's three types: the prisoner, the vacationer, and the learner. These are almost self-explanatory. The prisoner, they don't want to be there. Maybe the boss made them come. Maybe it's mandatory training. You'll see it, arms crossed, checked out, sometimes even vocal about it. They're serving time, right? And then you have the vacationer. They're happy to be there, but not for you in the training event that you're at. They're showing up for the trip, the resort, the break from the routine, especially at conferences and nice locations. You're competing with the pool and the sunshine, getting out of class early. That's a win for them. The training's holding them back from the fun. And that's a challenging environment to be a trainer in. And I've experienced it. Then you have the learner. And these are wonderful and glorious people. We love them. I love being one. They came for the content. They're taking notes. They're asking questions. They want something real from this experience that they're going to take back and they're going to apply. Here's the mistake some speakers can make. They try to win over the prisoners. They work to captivate those vacationers. And in so doing, they often find themselves wasting the time of the learners. You end up watering down the content, chasing people who are never going to engage in the first place, and the people who actually came ready to learn walk away with less than they deserved. The principle is this: serve the learners first. They're the ones who will carry the message that you're bringing forward, apply it, and probably thank you for bringing it to them. The prisoners might come around or they won't, but you don't sacrifice quality trying to convert them. The true art of great speaking is this: you're going to be engaging because you're delivering valuable content well. You don't need tricks. You don't need to chase attention. If you're clear, if you're passionate and you know your material, that is the draw. The learners are already with you. And some of the prisoners and vacationers will get pulled in naturally because you're worth listening to. The trap is when speakers start to perform to win attention instead of trusting the value of what they're delivering. And that's when the content begins to suffer. I'll give you an example of this. I was at a software conference a few years ago, and it was about software. It was about learning a program, a very heavy program at that. And the speaker opened the day by putting his hands down, hands at the podium as he's delivering the introduction. I'm talking literally the first minute of his presentation. Puts his hands in his palms and he's saying, "This is what many of you are going to feel like today." And I was like, oh no, he's doing this. He's setting such an interesting expectation. What about the people who are there excited to learn? Why would they want to resemble and feel that? Oh, it was so frustrating to see. And that was the sentiment that was being expressed by some of the audience members too. He addressed the room like they were all prisoners who didn't want to be there. And what message does that send even to the learners, the people who actually showed up ready? You've just told them this isn't going to be worth their time. You gave the whole room permission to check out before you even started. Don't do that. And don't pursue attention. Earn it by being worth listening to. Audience number two now. So I think that example for our public speaking crowd, the vacationer, prisoner, and the learner, I think that is just something good that you can take away and think about. Build your content for the learner. It's time for today's Suck Less Spotlight from Autoflow. Today's spotlight is on advisor eye twitches. Listen, clients like to stay informed throughout the repair process, and studies indicate clients are most satisfied receiving text updates versus phone calls. But call you they will, interrupting everything from estimating to quality conversations and your game of solitaire. That is, unless you text them first using Autoflow. With Autoflow's automated text update, your phone only rings for the right reasons. That way, with less phone interruptions, your eye twitch will definitely suck less. For this and more things that could suck less, visit autoflow.com. Looking to drive more customers to your auto repair shop? Trust ShopDog Marketing to be your reliable companion with AI-powered customer-first marketing, websites, and high-ranking local search. Maximize your reach with our mobile-first and voice search expertise. Car counts are like ice cream. Sweeten your revenue with ShopDog Marketing. Grab our free guide to learn how AI can drive more repair orders every day. Don't miss out on this chance to boost your business. Visit ShopDogMarketing.com. Every professional auto repair shop needs a trusted communication partner. At Inbound, our established VoIP platform is backed by years of industry experience, guarantees reliable connections, and is combined with cutting-edge AI-powered analytics. We deliver actionable insights that support your business growth. With Inbound, you get more than just calls. You get a smarter, more efficient operation. Get Inbound on your team today and see how we can transform your business. Visit callinbound.com. Now, audience two, clients at the counter. This is clients, people walking in your door. A similar principle, but different context here. When a client walks through your door, they're not a blank slate. They've got a behavioral pattern and you can read it. You can adapt. And I'll cite Dennis McCarron for this portion again. I went and learned from him on this dimensional model, and it uses two axes. There's one line, warmth versus hostility. And then there's another line, vertical, of dominance versus submission. So this gives you four quadrants. And in that top left quadrant, you would have dominant hostile. They walk in armed, their internet printout, their quote from down the street, whatever, ready to challenge you. You'll need to stay calm with them, not get defensive. They want to be respected, not sold. Then you have the submissive hostile. So this is still on the left side, but on the bottom part of the quadrant. Now they're quiet. They're guarded. They're giving you nothing. They're still hostile. They don't trust you yet. You can't push them. You got to build small amounts of credibility over time. They're watching to see if you're different. And then on the bottom, lower right quadrant, you have the submissive and warm. They're friendly. They're agreeable. They're nodding along. They're non-committal, though. These are the ones that are more likely to give you a false yes, and you'll need to probe a lot more with them to really make sure they actually do understand. They're going to be very agreeable. I find myself as a client sometimes being in that spot, but I'm not necessarily ready to commit to things sometimes, and it's really common to run into. They might seem like your friendliest customers, but when confusion comes, it creates a lot of problems. Top right quadrant, Q4, as Dennis would say, dominant warm. And this is the real good client type. They're engaged. They ask good questions. They're ready to collaborate. You can be transparent easily with them. You can explain your reasoning, and there's trust, and it gets built over time. And this is good, right? The key is, and I'll quote Dennis on this piece as we did in a recent webinar with him. You cannot warm hostility. If someone comes in and they're in that hostile side of this equation, right? You don't win them over by being passive. You have to actually stay assertive and grounded and professional and meet strength with strength. It's not aggression. It's not combativeness, but it is confidence. There's a big difference on that. And I could never, ever unpack all of this. Dennis teaches this. It was a 4-day class for this dimensional model. Dennis is one of 6 people that I understand is even certified to train in that field. And it's a career's worth of study. Dennis is a behavioral expert. And that methodology is registered and copyrighted material. Everything I've shared on what I just mentioned on the axis is on that. And the quadrants, public domain information, which you can find and research yourself. I will make sure I get some links and show notes for you on that. And fun fact, actually, in that piece, it was that back in when I recently joined Autoflow, Chris Cloutier is new on his team, employee number 5 at Autoflow, but back in May of 2018, that's Chris' first thing he did was send me to Dennis and George Kingman, who were conducting that class. It was in Schaumburg, Illinois, and was a 4-day learning adventure for me. And it was really great and lifelong relationships as a result. I wish Dennis was still teaching those classes. I could use a refresher on it. And my hope is to have Dennis back on again so we can discuss and dig into this properly, at least to an extent that would be appropriate. There are still training courses on that you could look up and sign up for. The key on this, though, too, is like, just think of this. If you're trying to assess the way a client's coming in, you have whether either they're dominant or submissive. You have either hostility or warmth. Those are really the two planes that you can be judging things on. And once you start to recognize which quadrant, it's just 4 things to remember, you're going to start to see what strategies and communication resonate with them the most. And you do need to be able to be adaptive to that. Great client success people will be very adaptive to that. The third audience we'll discuss today is your team. And your team members are effectively an audience too, in the proper term of this, interlocutors, right? And the way you communicate with them has to adapt just like it does with your clients. And the mistake I see a lot of times shop owners, managers, other team members make is a lot of times we communicate solely from where we're coming from right now, and we fail to consider where someone else is coming from, and that's going to set the stage for all kinds of potential problems. I'll stick with some of Dennis' model again, because I was actually pulling out, and the reason I went down so many of these rabbit trails, I actually found my workbook the other day from that class, and it applied more to what I do on a day-to-day basis, working with automotive repair shops on change management things, and there's just all kinds of cool information. I'm holding up the book here if you're watching this on YouTube. But there's this another grid that I find really useful for assessing our team members, especially in the situation where we're trying to manage or coach a change or any other behavior. And the two planes that I'm going to encourage you to just think about with your team is their ability and their motivation. You either have high ability or low ability, high motivation or low motivation. Very simple, 2 things to look at. And there's a simple approach to how each quadrant that this creates needs to be dealt with. And where I find myself a lot of times is dealing with people that are motivated but don't know how to do a thing. Implementing digital systems, for example, a lot of times the know-how on some of those things is surprisingly not there. And it's really easy to instruct skills. And that's exactly what you do for those people that have high motivation, but do not have the ability. You instruct them. You teach them the thing. That is the how. You're giving them the how. If you have someone with high ability, but low motivation, well, that needs counseling. You're giving them, and in my opinion, this may be an oversimplification, but you're going to focus a lot more on the why the thing needs to be done. And you're going to win them over with the why. So those are the why or the how. And then, of course, there's the high ability, high motivated people. You're just collaborating with them at that point. Y'all understand the need. Y'all want to make the change. And y'all have the skills to do it. It's just, let's get it done. We're collaborating. It's a beautiful spot to be. And here's where my chief struggle comes in and where I think the vast majority of you struggle with on a regular basis. On a great number of things in our repair facilities is that we're sometimes dealing with staff members who have very low ability and very low motivation. What do you do with that? Well, you have to direct them. You have to literally tell them exactly what to do. These are the ones that require the most management. Where you're constantly directing things. Your communication is going to be also have to be very direct with that. It'll feel a lot like accountability. It may even feel a little bit overbearing at times, depending on the individuals. But low motivation, low skill is a very difficult spot. And it's total supervision, clear expectations, follow-ups. You're managing in that case. The mistake would be treating everyone the same and expecting the same type of response to the same types of message. If you're treating your high skill, high motivation people with direction, well, they're going to be burned out. They want to collaborate with you. They don't want to just be directed and told. They probably have some input and it's probably very valuable. And that's a great spot to be. And that's a great staff member to have. Know your audience on this. I think if you just draw that up a simple plane, identify where one of your problem employees, somebody might even be coming to mind right now. Don't put them in a box. Put them in a quadrant. And then you can actually assess better how you need to approach them if you're going to win them over at all. Here's where we land. Know your audience. Really great tip. Good advice. It sure is nuanced. The word audience can mislead you. And it lets you think that your job is to prepare a message and just deliver it. Like that's the beginning and end of what you have to do. Like you're on stage, they're in seats. The real work, obviously, very different. The real work is reading that person in front of you in real time and adapting. When you're speaking to a room, are they prisoners, vacationers, learners? Serve the learners first. Don't chase attention. Earn it by being worth listening to. And when you're at the counter, are they dominant or submissive, warm or hostile? Read it and adjust. And remember, you cannot warm hostility. Love that Dennis quote so much. And when you're coaching your team, do they have the ability, the motivation? Are you collaborating, counseling, instructing, or directing? Don't treat everyone the same. And now, one more word of caution. Read folks without judging. Be very careful about putting labels on people. And if you go on high alert looking for certain traits, you'll find them, whether they're really there or they're not. And that can lead you to wrong conclusions. So let the evidence present itself. I would say, yeah, these are common patterns, not necessarily personality labels. People will drift between any of these things in many cases. So don't try to make somebody fit into a category. One day they may be in one spot and one day another. Just become aware that these are dynamics. They exist and stay curious about the person in front of you. That curiosity will always come into the topic in this conversation on anything related to effective communication. The person in front of you isn't your audience. They're your interlocutor. And fun fact, there is a verb form for that word, interlocutor. It's interlocute, to engage in dialogue, to speak with another. But nobody's used that word since 1621. It's 400 years. Maybe it's time to bring it back. And if you want to communicate effectively, whether you're on stage, at the counter, or on the shop floor, you have to stop performing and start connecting. And that's tip number three, know your audience, or better yet, know who you are communicating with. And we appreciate hearing from you on anything that helps or suggestions on topics you'd like to hear us discuss on the show that will help you on your communication journey. Please interlocute with us. at speakup@craigoneill.net. O'Neill is O-N-E-I-L-L. I'd love to hear from you and anything that would help. And remember, please listen up to the other shows on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. We have Remarkable Results Radio with Carm Capriato, Diagnosing the Aftermarket A through Z with Matt Fonslow, and Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest, the Auto Repair Marketing Podcast with Brian and Kim Walker, and the Weekly Blitz with Coach Chris Cotton. Once again, thank you so much to our sponsors, AutoFlow, Shop Dog Marketing, and Call Inbound. Thank you for joining us on our journey here, our communication journey, and thank you all of our listeners. Now get out there, listen up, speak up, know your audience.
You've been listening to Speak Up, Effective Communication with Craig O'Neill on the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. Download our exclusive podcast app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com because the best conversations in the industry start here. Check the show notes for Craig's YouTube channel and email. Let him know what topics you'd like him to speak up about.